T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You're listening to Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. Bruce Levine is your man. I am the co-host, what, number 6, 7, 12?
Check with me next week.
I will. Thank you to David Schuster for filling in last week for me. Steve Rosenblum coming up in 1 hour, and I'll be with him for the next 3 hours after that. But Bruce, a flurry of moves by the Chicago White Sox yesterday.
Yes, indeed. The Chicago White Sox declined to give a contract to Matt Davidson, and maybe a little bit more surprisingly, to Avisail Garcia, a guy that is just 2 years removed from hitting .330, which was the second highest batting average, if you believe in that number any longer, out there in baseball in 2017, 18 homers, 80 RBI, only 27 years old, 1 year left before free agency. They decided that Matt, at his arbitration number, he would be paid around $8 million, that they could spend that money more wisely elsewhere and let Garcia move on somewhere else.
He is the biggest name, the biggest storyline of all of those moves. Ultimately, you have to look at Avisail Garcia's run here in Chicago as very disappointing. Even though he eventually bloomed into that very good season from a couple years ago, he was thought to be Miguel Cabrera Jr., one of the centerpieces of Rick Hahn's first attempt at a quick changeover, and it just never really happened for Avi here.
You know, he wasn't a great outfielder. I think he was second in the league in assists 2 years ago, but he also led in errors. So, you know, the assists are always an alarming number from outfielders because that means that people run on you. So, therefore, you will have more assists. Schwarber, I think, was second or third in baseball this year with assists because his reputation was that you could run on him. Well, he got better. He got better defensively. His footwork improved. His getting to the ball, obviously, he lost weight. He was in better condition. But it's two prong. You know, one, they run more on you, and two, you have more opportunities to throw people out. So his defense was never great. His injury-prone, you know, situation was a concern. And opening up a spot on a team without a guy that's been there for 5 years in the outfield to clog it up for Eloy Jimenez is an important factor in this.
And in terms of whether they could have gotten something for Avisail Garcia, they've tried and tried,
Last offseason they tried and they had no takers. And that was coming off of 330, right. 18, and 80. And people are upset today because they think that they could have gotten something decent back for Garcia.
But they didn't get anything last year after a better season. And the free agent market proves to be flooded with corner outfield types who can give you what Garcia gives you.
Not to hit a guy when he's down, but, you know, there were times where the work ethic was questioned early in his tenure with the White Sox. And the character was questioned with his, you know, prior rap sheet that he had before he got here. I think the teammates liked him. I don't think he possessed very many leadership qualities. But to be honest with you, I think that they felt moving on was the right thing for the White Sox, with their strength in the organization appearing to be outfielders coming over the next couple of years.
I'll look back on Avisail Garcia's tenure here as just tantalizing. Often early, it'd be tantalizing. You'd see, oh my God, look at that power to the opposite field. If he could ever learn to turn on the ball with power, if he could ever swing just a little bit earlier, Jose Bautista, or oh my God, look at that speed as he almost beats out a ground ball. And it just never, never manifests.
I'm as guilty as you are, Matt, about willing players to be a certain way. And it just doesn't ever seem to happen.
Well, it's sometimes guys
I've been
get
trying
better.
To will Kyle Schwarber into a 300 hitter who hits 40 home runs and drives in 120.
Yeah, but sometimes guys can learn to spit on the outside slider like Javier Baez
can
learn to hit the opposite way like Javier Baez and break out.
Yeah, you hope that almost all your players have the talent and the ability of Javier Baez to be able to do that.
Well, and the makeup to actually progress.
He has phenomenal tools, and he's got a baseball IQ and acumen above most. So it was hard to watch swinging and missing at everything when he first came up, but there was a lot of quality there. Mike has been waiting an awful long time in Frankfurt to talk to us. Mike, welcome to Inside the Clubhouse. You're on with Matt and Bruce.
Bruce, I think from a Sox fans perspective, we want to know what you think. We're now closing the book on both the PD trade, which was one of the biggest trades in Sox history, and on the Addison Russell trade with yesterday's actions. What does it tell us about the Sox ability to make player evaluations? And I'm assuming that the same guys who made the PD deal and have, you know, all summer to evaluate who they trade for and who made the Addison Russell deal are still the same guys essentially making the player development decisions today. What can you tell us about the ultimate lessons of these two deals and how it will affect us going forward?
He means Garcia, not Russell, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Garcia, the Garcia deal.
And the PV deal.
The Garcia for PV deal, the Addison Reed deal. And also, Bruce, ultimately, since we gave up on Neves, why the heck did we give up on Tyler Flowers? I think inquiring Sox fans want your view.
Okay. Thank you. Well, Matt, and thanks for waiting as well, Mike, for all that time. I think we always hear about people looking at makeup and determining that as the deciding factor for teams as to whether they make trades for people or not. In the case of Garcia, it was a 21-year-old guy that had already gone to the World Series and had success with the Detroit Tigers at the beginning of his career. Here was a guy that already competed. He already played in playoffs where almost everybody with the White Sox organization right now, none of them have been in a playoff situation. Almost the entire team at this point. So from that perspective, they felt that he was still a guy growing. They knew that he had some personal issues with a teammate earlier in his career. They felt they did their due diligence and that this young man would grow. And he didn't really have any incidents with the Chicago White Sox. I don't think the makeup kept him from being a better player. I just don't think that there was any leadership involved here. I don't think there was any belief that he was part of the future. And the hard answer is they let him go because they couldn't trade him for anything of worth whatsoever.
Those deals that he's talking about all happened right when Rick Hahn took over and he tried to engineer kind of a rolling rebuild where they went and traded for a lot of guys who were just about ready, supposedly. Right. They, you know, Garcia, Matt Davidson,
yeah, the Reed
Adam,
deal.
Adam Eaton.
The Reed deal for Davidson.
Right? Eaton, like these guys are like, oh no, they're ready. But now we'll take him and immediately put him out there. And that is, when you trade for other people's prospects like that, you don't know exactly what you're getting. It could be a mixed bag. And Matt Davidson's run is proof of that.
Yeah, and Matt, you know, was a number one pick by the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And tremendous power, you know, great guy.
Great year at AAA just before they traded for him.
Right. The 2 years before that were Nat. The 2 years before that were batting 199 and 201 and striking out 200 times. So he had to grow within the realm of, you know, being a better player, more functional. But the harsh reality is he was nobody's third baseman.
Mm-hmm.
He was nobody's first baseman. He was a DH. And the wide view that you need to have as a White Sox fan, I believe, Matt, is they cleared the docket of a DH. Of two possible DHs, they cleared the docket of a third baseman, first baseman type, and they're saying to the free agents out there, Harper and Machado, we've cleared the deck for you. This is going to be your team. Jose Abreu has 1 year left. He might be extended, but if you come to our team, you're going to be the leader on this team. This is going to be a Manny Machado White Sox team. This is going to be a Bryce Harper White Sox team. We're cleared the decks here. We cleared $10 million of money that we were going to owe somebody else, and we're ready to make the biggest bid for you to come to the Chicago White Sox.
The Omar Narvaez trade, I wanted us to comment on here, Bruce. You're listening to Inside the Clubhouse on The Score. This hour is brought to you by Webb Chevy. Searching for a great deal on Chevys in Chicago? Visit Webb Chevy in Plainfield or Oak Lawn. 5 years ago, that's a Rule 5 pickup, Omar Narvaez. And now here, 5 years in, at age 26, you've got a catcher, a part-time catcher, who can hit, and you've discovered that. But he's not a good pitch framer, not good defensively.
Too many balls through the five hole.
Right? And you have traded him now for 2 years of control of a very good back-end reliever in Alex Colome. I think this is a terrific trade.
One of the people, a couple people on social media asked me, well, if Colome was so good, why was he the backup in Seattle?
Because Edwin Diaz is the best.
Because they had
the game.
Diaz, and they wanted to have the best bullpen in baseball when they traded for him last May with Tampa, when they brought Colome over from Tampa in a trade. He did something this year that no one's ever done. He had more than 10 saves and 30 holds, never been done in baseball history. Before that, he had 47 saves in 2017, 37 saves in 2016. And he still has 2 years of contract control. This is an ideal guy to have if you're going to step it up this year and have a better bullpen to help some of your young pitchers actually win those games at the end. And as you pointed out in our pregame chat, a very flippable guy at the deadline in late July, if things aren't working out to the point where you see the forest through the trees and the Sox are going to be competitive.
Let's listen to Rick Hahn from a conference call yesterday talking about Alex Colome and the acquisition for Omar Narvaez. All right, okay. I think froze up, but here's the other thing, Bruce, about it is that when you're ready to truly win in 2020, Omar Narvaez is not going to be one of the guys you want in your catching mix. And you've got two kids. You've got Sebby Zavala and Zach Collins, who you think might be ready to be those helpers.
They might be by the end of the year. Zavala might be by spring training.
Mm-hmm.
Collins, not quite the defensive product that they want yet, but certainly moving along with his offensive metrics. And they'll probably bring in another backup. You know, they have one more year of Wellington Castillo. And they're primed to improve their catching. You want to try that again?
Yeah, this is Rick Hahn talking about Alex Colome from yesterday.
Late in reliever, we like the way his stuff plays, the combination, and the track record of success in the American League were both appealing, as well as the 2 years of control and the price points that those 2 years are likely going to come at through the arbitration process. He fits in well for the short term over the course of the next two seasons. As how he'll fit in 21 and beyond, it's way premature to make that assessment. Obviously, we can extend him at some point during his stay here or revisit it once he hits free agency.
So it's interesting because he's trying not to say that's a tradable chip over the next couple of deadlines, but we know
right.
that he is.
And again, he is a power arm. He can set up. He can close. And again, the White Sox have to rebuild the credibility of their bullpen in order for the Giolitos, the Lopez's, eventually Cease, and some of their other fine young pitchers to have a payout for a well-pitched ball game. Their mm-hmm. bullpen was, I think, ranked 23rd or 24th last year. They had an ERA about 4.66. It's got to improve. If you have to build on how to learn to win. Okay, you can't just say, okay, we're winning now. You're going to have to bring in proper leaders, and you're also going to have that feel good of pitchers being able to win ball games that they start and pitch well in.
I love the idea of not wasting time in 2019 on Avi Garcia and Matt Davidson offensively.
I like it.
Go ahead. Let's see what you got.
It's a statement to White Sox fans that, you know what, these guys are peripheral players. We like them. We thank them, but we're trying to do better.
Uh-huh, trying to do better, and that division is coming back to the pack, especially if Cleveland ends up selling.
And
White Sox could be sneaky interesting in that division if they do some things right between now and the spring.
Great point. Speaking of great, and some people will take exception, but we think the great Joe Buck will be joining us after this break. We'll continue to talk Sox and Cubs right up to the top of the 11 o'clock hour when Rosie sits in with the Met, and they do what they do to suck so you don't have to.
We'll be right back with Joe Buck on The Score. Welcome back in on 670 The Score. It is Inside the Clubhouse. I am Matt Spiegel. He is Bruce Levine on a Saturday morning. And our friend Joe Buck is on the line. I believe, Joe Buck, that there were 2 weeks in a row last month where you did baseball on Tuesday and Wednesday night, then Thursday night NFL, and then baseball on Friday and Saturday, and then Sunday NFL for 2 weeks in a row. Do I have that right?
I blacked a lot of that out. I don't remember any of it, but I know that I'm sitting here. Is it December yet? I think we're in December.
Just now.
Yeah. So here I am. It's no longer October. It's no longer even November, and I'm directly pointed to the end of the football season, which should finish in quite a flourish, but has me excited with 7-month-old twin boys at home.
I can't
wait for them to know that they have a father.
Yeah, very nice.
That's a good time to learn it. 18 games in 2 sports in 7 cities over a 22-day span, but still has time to talk to me and you, Bruce.
Joe, you've always been a stand-up guy ever since the first day I met you at Al Lang in St. Petersburg,
God,
when your dad said, you know, Joe Buck, don't you?
And I said, you know my son, Joe, Bruce, Joe.
Yeah, and that's it.
You guys should hang out tomorrow night.
First of all, what a beautiful guy, and what a great and loyal friend he was to have. Gosh, still miss him today, I'm sure, like you do every day.
Yeah, you know, he was one of those guys, Bruce, that, and you saw it, I lived it. He kind of had kind of a glide when he would walk, you know, he would kind of, and then, you know, at the end of his life, he had Parkinson's, which took the glide out of his step, but he still had this way of kind of breezing into a room and taking it over in the nicest possible way. Like people wanted to be around him. People wanted to.
Joe, it was John Wayne-like.
Yeah, no, it was. And that's the sense that I got. And, you know, in our little small world that we've lived in for a long time in those media lunchrooms and the press boxes across the country. It was just fun as a kid to see how people wanted to be close to him. And when I was a little boy, I used to joke, and it probably wasn't the safest thing in the world, but when we were leaving the ballpark and I was there with him every day, you know, he would have me hold his beer before, by the way, he drove me home, and would sign everything and anything for people that came up to him on his way from the press box down to the parking garage. And it was I couldn't get close enough to him because I wanted everybody else in that gathering to know that was my dad. And it was a great way to learn about the game. And a great way to see somebody who loved what he did for a living and worked hard at it.
Yeah, and no one was prouder than he was about your success as well. So that there's no doubt about that. Joe, earlier in the week you were on WEEI and you talked a little bit about the pacing of the World Series and that it really wasn't quite up to snuff. Social media took you on. You had to come out and make a couple statements about some incorrect responses to it. What's your overall view, and can you reiterate exactly what you said earlier?
Yeah, well, I was doing a thing on WEEI that really was kind of Patriots based at the beginning, and I'm here talking to you from Boston because I'm doing the Patriots and the Vikings game tomorrow, and the conversation was really about football, and then it transitioned to baseball because obviously the Red Sox won it all, and then the question was about the ratings being down and that somebody at Fox had said that Boston is no longer a national draw like they used to be, which I haven't done the research. I have no idea. I don't believe that to be the case, but who knows? And then the question was, why were the ratings down? And I simply said, and I've said it every year, if you get six or seven games, the ratings are going to be a positive story. If you get four or five games, it's probably going to be a negative story, and it doesn't matter who the matchup is. And that was my answer. That's always been my answer. And, you know, I believe that to be the case. It's not scientific, but I think by the time you get to a game six or a game seven, I mean, take the Cubs out of it. When the Cubs won it all in 2016, you were going to get a big number no matter what, because the Cubs were in the World Series. It's a national story, and people pay attention to that. But when you have other matchups, you need to get the casual fan under the tent, which happens when you get to a six, or then you hope a game seven, because it becomes do or die. And then the question was about, you know, the games themselves. And I said it basically while I was doing it. You know, the better at-bats were being put on by the Boston Red Sox. And I watched the Dodgers go through the NLCS. I watched them go through the World Series. And I know that they're a really heavy analytics team. And when you talk about that, you're talking about, you know, launch angle. And the at-bats, I think, sometimes get thrown away because guys are up there looking to pump one out of the ballpark. And to me, in postseason, it's different than the regular season. If you can get a guy on base, you can get activity on the bases, you can put pressure on a defense, you can squeeze a run home, not just by the squeeze play, but force somebody to get to the plate, I think it's invaluable. And the Dodgers, to me, were waiting around for the long ball, and when that doesn't come, I think they're ripe for the picking. And, you know, you look at Boston, and I'll stop talking after this, they have a general manager in Dave Dombrowski, who combines a lot of the old. He's a Heyman guy. He's a Paul Richards guy. Mm-hmm. His foundation is based in scouting.
Right.
And then they put the analytics on top of it. And I think that's really my answer, is you can't go all analytics and take the personality out of the game, the look in somebody's eye. You have to be able to trust your gut as a manager. And I think too many of these teams are now going to just buy the numbers. And I think too much of a good thing it is a bit dangerous for some of these teams when it counts the most.
It's hard to be honest now, isn't it, Joe? I mean, you've always been an honest broadcaster, an honest person. Your dad was certainly above and beyond that. But it's not popular to be honest about what your thoughts are.
The funny thing is, if you say that you are not all in on analytics, somehow to I think more of a younger generation, that means you somehow hate the game. And then people throw the word hate around so much now, it's just unbelievable to me, especially when it goes to social media. But I think it's the opposite. I think for people like John Smoltz, myself, you know, I would imagine you're probably somewhere near my camp, that if you've seen enough baseball over the years, and I've said I grew up in this game and I've seen a lot of it and I've done 21 World Series and I'm entitled to my opinion on it. I think, you know, you realize that you're going to get labeled as the get off my lawn guy if you're not all in on the new stats and the analytics and whatever. And I'm not dismissing any of that. I think that's all really valuable, cool information, but you cannot eliminate the personal stuff and what a manager sees through body language. I would say the best managers in the game, and I think Joe Maddon over the years has proven himself to really gauge what he's got in the dugout and be around these guys and see who's got that look in their eye, see who's chomping at the bit to get up to the plate, see who can't wait to get back out there and take the ball and get three more outs on the mound, to see that's all a part of it too. And so that's where I come down on it. I think the analytics stuff is great, but you cannot eliminate the observational piece of the puzzle if you're putting a lineup together or strategy in game together.
Anybody in a front office who's worth their salt knows it is a blend of the scouting and the analytics. And if you talk to Theo Epstein about their software Carmine that they invented in Boston, there was a component for makeup in there because it matters. And Jason McLeod will tell you, he learns about people from the living room more than anything when he scouts these guys. And to your point about the at-bats for the Red Sox, which undoubtedly were better, especially with two strikes, and the numbers are there to back that up. it takes a pretty special hitter like J.D. Martinez and Mookie Betts and others, but really J.D. Martinez, to convert from slugger to contact guy because of the moment with two strikes. It takes a very special guy to do that. And the Cubs' offense was broken all in the second half of the year, and Theo and others have talked about needing exactly that, a hybrid, somebody who can be the slugger and then adapt to the moment, which is what the Red Sox showed you. So I think it's undeniable, and it's obvious right there in the guys who played the best in that World Series.
Yeah, and you know, to go, I agree, obviously, with that, because I'm public about it, but I don't feel like, you know, oh, it was this gotcha moment because, quote-unquote, social media reacts. I think sometimes that becomes kind of a lazy, easy thing for writers to write about and go, oh, you know, Joe Buck said that, you know, that analytics is a bad thing for baseball, or the reason why the World Series ratings were down is because the games were not compelling. Well, that was a total summation. It wasn't my summation of what I witnessed in the World Series, but if they want to write that headline and then quote-unquote Twitter reacts, I could not care less. I speak to more people when I do a World Series than those that are complaining on Twitter. So that's it's not like I feel like I'm on your show because I love Matt and I love Bruce. I don't feel like I have to go on some sort of a like apology tour for having my opinion. That's fine. But to be painted as a guy who hates the game and therefore shouldn't be doing it or whatever because that's what they said on Twitter, that nothing could be less relevant to my life than that reaction. I literally don't care.
We've had this conversation in lunchrooms at ballparks, Bruce. I've had it in press boxes with people and on the air with lots of different baseball people. Could drop the names on who they are, but a lot of people agree with this basic premise. Right now, the formula to become a winning baseball team has progressed differently than the formula to create entertaining television. It's like the game has progressed to this incredibly efficient place analytically. We're like, yep, homers, 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 and wait for it, and velocity, velocity, velocity. But then you don't go with balls in play. I know on a Sunday night game, they had 18 minutes between balls in play at one point this year.
You know what? It's just flat out boring from the sixth inning on, especially when you got two really good bullpens, Joe.
And it's smart people putting it together, understandably, but that doesn't make it interesting.
I know,
sometimes.
But it's not popular for baseball people. I'm considered one, Joe. You certainly are. Matt is one to say that the game is boring because you're going to get slammed.
Well, yeah, but I mean, again, you're going to. I don't think for a minute that Rob Manfred and the people in charge in baseball are not thinking about this a lot, many hours of their days. I think that it's something that, you know, and John talks about it, Smoltz, about eliminating the shift, and, mm-hmm. and I don't know what it takes to get it back to more action in less time. I don't know what that formula is. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, training hitters to level a baseball might help, because 34% of the outcome in 2018 was strikeout, walk, or home run, which means no action. And it's increased every year since 2014.
But they don't get paid for changing the way that we're talking about. They get paid by continuing to do what they're doing.
Right, but it's not the way that you're going to have an exciting player. You both talked about Boston being an exciting team and doing things the right way. Yeah, because they were raised properly, they have been trained properly, and they're not one-dimensional in their approach, Joe.
Well, you're right, and as Matt said, you know, when you have a J.D. Martinez that's willing to, you know, forego the power with two strikes or in a certain situation and just put the bat on the ball, good things happen when you put the bat on the ball. And I would say that, you know, with the level of defense that we've seen and guys and their abilities to throw from the outfield and range on the infield,
three
just
great
the bat
outfielders
on the ball is going to make something good happen more times than not. But I would say that just logically speaking, if I am, name the guy, Max Muncy, and there's a shift on the infield where the entire left side of the infield is open, and you're worried about launch angle, and you say, yeah, but if I put the ball on the ground, I'm probably going to make an out with the odds with all the players over on the right side of the infield. If you were to drop one bunt down in the postseason, but maybe five bunts down or push something to the left side of the infield, I would say odds are, in a key situation, they're probably not going to do some major shift against you. Now, I could be wrong, but I just think logic has to enter into it. And if you're down in a postseason series or if you're losing in a game,
mm-hmm.
get on base and get something going.
Be a good idea.
As opposed to, you know, just that 18-inning game, if Muncy doesn't hit that home run, we might still be playing with some of those at-bats that you saw. It was just like, just swing, 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 sit down. Swing, 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 sit down. There was really very little action through 18 innings on the bases. And the way the Dodgers ended the World Series, their final six outs were all strikeouts. I get it. That there was some good pitching going on the other side, but these were relatively tight games, and getting something going has to, more times than not, lead to something good on the scoreboard, I would think.
To be clear, all three of us and a lot of the listeners to this show love the game and love that 18-inning game, and we'll watch it all. It's about broadening the audience and getting that younger audience. And you mentioned Rob Manfred, Joe Buck. I think they're going to try to legislate pace of play and legislate more action. I think that's going to come very soon. Do you?
Yeah, I just don't know how they do it. You know, everybody, they do pitch with a clock in the minor leagues, I'm told, and guys on the mound are getting a little bit more conditioned to that. I think if you did it for... And I'm not saying I'm totally for it. I haven't thought much about it, but I am for get the ball and let's go. One of the best paced games that we do every year is the All-Star game.
Right.
Because guys go up there and they don't want to get embarrassed, and pitchers are throwing 98 miles an hour. They go up there ready to hit, and they go up there ready to swing. And for whatever reason, that game moves at a really crisp pace. I mean, if you look at the time of game, it's probably not going to tell you that, but that's including all of those defensive changes and pitching changes and different guys coming up to the plate. If you had that mentality in a regular game, I would say that the action would move at a better rate. So is the pitching clock the answer? I don't know. Is eliminating the shift the answer? I don't know. There are people that are, I guess, paid to figure this stuff out, but something has to happen to increase the amount of action. Not you know, you can complain about the commercial breaks, and I'd be a hypocrite if I dismiss that entirely, because I'm with the network that you know has to get paid for the money they pay for the rights, and that's all a part of the business. But I think it's more a question of when the inning starts, how much action is there before the inning ends, and that to me is the central issue with the game. And I think everybody is aware of that and trying to figure out the best way to go about attacking that.
Joe, 30 seconds on the Chicago Bears. Is the NFL a better entity? Is it a better entertainment vehicle with the Chicago Bears being a top team and, more importantly, the Monsters of Midway on defense again?
My God, yes. The answer to your question is yes. And for people who, you know, network announcers who may live in St. Louis, it's even better when that guy works for Fox that owns the rights to the NFC. God, yes.
Short drives for Joe Buck.
Short drives, short flights, whatever it is. My grandfather played for George Halas in the Chicago Bears, so I grew up with a Bears helmet on my shelf, and because the football Cardinals were so bad, I leaned towards Chicago and the Houston Oilers for some reason as a kid. So, yeah, life's good when the Bears are good. So I'm all for what they're doing right now under their first-year head coach, who's been great.
That's because you were smitten with Earl Campbell like the rest of us.
I couldn't get enough. And Pastorini and Mike Renfro and all those guys. That was a fun team to watch.
Yeah, it was. I got to commend you with all the different games of different sports you've been doing. Not once did you call a tight end a shortstop.
Great.
Or call the end zone the left field line.
Yes.
I wonder if you ever heard this from Sam Rosen, who did this one time doing a Bears preseason game here in Chicago. Listen to this for a second.
9 points on the board, all courtesy of the strong leg of Robbie Gould. The Bears still down by a point.
Sam?
Yeah, absolutely. I have so many synapses that fire that I have to stop as it's coming out of my mouth. I'll probably do that this week.
But you never did, though, and I felt bad for Sam because I imagine him thinking, this ice is terrible at this rink. Yeah. He thinks he's doing hockey for a moment.
That's one of the better Sam Rosen impersonations I've heard today. Wow. So that was good.
I'll give you more.
Joe, thanks a ton. Keep up the great work. We appreciate it, sir.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thanks,
all
Joe.
Right. All right.
Joe Buck from Fox TV.
Yeah, fabulous guy. A great announcer. Not always that popular in the Chicago area. A lot of people think he's a anti-Cub guy. But if you go around, when you're replacing the local broadcasters on a broadcast, it's pretty much all the way around. You know, this guy doesn't get our team.
They think he's anti-everybody. Everywhere. The Cleveland guys thought he was all pro-Kyle Schwarber during that World Series. And Buck has called doing that game where the Cubs made the World Series when they beat the Dodgers in the NLCS, he's called that the highlight of his career.
Awesome broadcaster, even better guy.
670 The Score is where you are. It's Inside the Clubhouse. Matt Spiegel and Bruce Levine. Keep it here. On Twitter, Russ Schneider enjoying the show. Bruce, joining Inside the Clubhouse. Loved when Joe Buck said, that's one of the best Sam Rosen impersonations I've heard today. It's early.
I thought it was Sam Rose.
it's pretty close, but I mean, he's got a chance to hear more as he's out there in Boston. Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Looking for something to do this weekend? Experience the Chicago Wolves game tonight at 7 or Sunday at 4 at Allstate Arena. On Sunday, bring a new stuffed animal for the Wolves' inaugural teddy bear toss. Free parking for all fans this season, courtesy of Kia. I have to out you, as we were discussing the Buck interview
again?
Yesterday. Yes. As we were discussing the Buck interview yesterday, I'm like, you know, it's going to be hard not to turn to football.
Oh, I knew what I was doing.
You're like... You say to me, no, this isn't the audience for that. It's really not the place. At the end, you ask a Bears question.
Well, of course, I set you up. You have to have Joe Buck, the voice of the NFL. You have to ask him a Bears question. I just didn't want you to ask it.
I didn't know his grandfather played for Hallis.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So, you know.
We have a great day coming up, even after this show, as you and Rosie take over to suck so other people don't have to. And then this afternoon, Matt.
Yes.
We have
Julie and Maggie together, and in fact, Julie and Maggie are going to be out and about for the Miller Lite Top Draft Show live from JL's Pizza and Sports Bar in Palatine from 2 to 5 p.m. Lance Briggs is going to be there from 3:30 to 5. That's awesome. Julie DeCaro and Maggie Hendricks, and they have been doing this thing for a long time here on Score Weekends.
I'm going to be listening and actually coming on.
Good.
Because... I want to hear their take on Addison Russell.
They've got good chemistry. Well, yeah, and I'm sure it's great that they'll have a voice today and have a show today to talk about that, among other things. And then they get to hang out with Lance Briggs, who's just absolutely terrific and just getting better at the football media thing. So again, that's JL's Pizza and Sports Bar in Palatine today. Head on out there and you can listen from 2 to 5.
Let's take a call to wrap up the show here. Mark in Lamont has been waiting patiently. Mark, welcome to Inside the Clubhouse. Matt and Bruce are with
you. Bruce, Matt, Mark, how are you guys?
Good, man.
Hey, Bruce, I think you probably have a little bit more knowledge on this. I'm really confused why people are talking about the Cubs' financial situation and not being able to have the ability to spend when they've got the pending TV deal, the revenues across, you know, the board. I'm confused why people say they don't have the money.
Well, when you say money, are you saying going over 5 or 10 million of where they're at, which is about 207 or 208 million, which is right at the competitive balance tax number, where you start paying extra money and eventually other players if you go too high, or doing the 30 or 40 million a year over for a Harper or Machado?
I would say the latter, just because the Dodgers and the Yankees and all these other really big market teams, you know, when they want somebody, they go get them. I'm confused why the Cubs couldn't do that.
I think they can.
I'll hang up and listen.
I think they can, Matt. I think they will. If they get the guy that they want, if they think they're in the Harper thing, I think they will go over. But why advertise it? Why would you, with 29 other teams arguably interested in the two top young guys at 26 being out there bandied around for 10 years, why would you say you would?
Especially when Harper's advertising
Is there any good reason to tell the public that this is what you're going after?
No, but I don't know that that will change the number.
For the White Sox, it's a different dynamic.
But that's not going to change the number that Harper eventually gets from the Cubs or anybody else.
But it's a different dynamic for the White Sox because they are out there trying to reestablish themselves in the marketplace. They are out there trying to sell tickets. They are out there trying to bring back people that were interested in their product. It makes a lot of sense for them to say, you know what? We're after Harper. We're after Machado. Uh-huh. We're after the signature guy.
To your point, Bruce, a moment on the conference call yesterday when our colleague George Hoffman asked Rick Hahn about Bryce Harper's name at the UC.
With that in mind, obviously, I'm sure you're well aware of what happened at the United Center several weeks ago with, you know, a banner that was seen with the name of a very big-time free agent and apparently wearing a Sox uniform over the Jordan statue. What was that all about? Was that a ruse? Was that somebody making a mistake and taking a picture they shouldn't have done?
I was at the GM meetings at the time, so it wasn't me, George.
Rick Hahn refusing to talk about it. He did go on. He did go on and address it and give an actual answer as well.
Could you perhaps elaborate on that?
No. I'm not interested in talking about anyone who's not a member of the White Sox organization, and it's not. In fact, I don't think it's even specifically allowed for me to comment on individual free agents. So again, we're going to remain consistent with our long-term plan. Guys that potentially fit on that long-term plan, you can certainly reasonably expect us to be fully engaged on, and all that entails.
That means, Matt, that the White Sox will go after big guys. They're not spending a bundle of money on a little group of guys here or there. They're still in rebuild mode. But if Harper and Machado are available, they're in.
It's a ton of interesting baseball angles all offseason, Bruce. Looking forward to being here with you every Saturday morning.
Matt, people can follow me on Twitter, MLB Bruce Levine, right on the website, 670thescore.com, Sox and Cubs every day. Matt, look forward to seeing you, and we'll be listening to you and Rosie on the way home.
Thanks to Joe Buck. Thank you to Wayne Randazzo and to Zach Withers. Saturday Suckage with Rosenblum and me is next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.